This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Above the milkpacking district, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Portland police seize 4 pounds of heroin. Sewage causes part of the UN to evacuate, and terrorists are targeting our snack bars.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, December 21st, 2010. Police seized just over 4 pounds of heroin after raids earlier this month in southeast Portland. Along with the heroin, which police said had a street value of $500,000, police also confiscated $2,000 in cash in the raids, according to Lieutenant Kelly Schaefer. After about 5 ounces were taken from 240th and Stark, an additional search at 129th and Division yielded 4.2 pounds of heroin. In the second raid, the drug was found hidden within common foodstuffs. Police arrested Flavio Perez Mesa, 27, and Juan Jose Covarrubias Casas, 34. They were accused of first-degree manufacture, distribution, and possession of a controlled substance. Portland police have confiscated about 23 pounds of heroin this year.
I'm sorry, they were hiding the heroin within foodstuffs.
Yeah, they
also within sundries, I would imagine.
Yeah, if you go to any of the news sites, I think it might have been KGW site. I was looking at
It's usually KGW.
It's KGW or KPTV. They usually have good pictures of things, and I think it's they had heroin like packaged up and hidden in like boxes of cereal and stuff.
When did it become too much trouble to just say food?
I don't know. Well, it's not. I don't know.
Food stuff is like signage. We're just starting to add. We're elongating words for no readily apparent reason.
I don't know. I think there's a difference between food stuffs and food. I like the word food stuffs.
Okay. Do I have to spell it like F-O-O-D-E?
Yes. Okay. Food. F-O-O-D stuffs.
No, D-E. Do I have to put a Renfair
foodie?
Spelling
foodie
on it?
Food stuffs.
It just a food stuff sounds like a thing that would be sold in a shop.
I like food stuff.
By somebody wearing an amethyst crystal around their neck.
What ho, good sir.
Exactly.
Would you care to see my food stuffs?
Yes. Maybe later. All right. Thank you for joining us today. It is Tuesday, December 21st,
Wait, today's something. Today's the shortest day of the year, is it not?
I think it is. Exactly.
Is the solstice happening? No, it was last night. I mean, it was technically today, but it was actually early this morning, right?
Yeah, it was early. It was like in the middle of the night.
And here's the thing. Doesn't matter because you couldn't see the moon anyway. So it was obscured by clouds, as Pink Floyd would say. So there was just really no there was no way to... It was a theoretical eclipse that I think couldn't actually be seen by anybody here in Portland.
I think the shortest day of the year thing would be a lot more impressive if it was like a whole lot shorter. Like... All of a sudden, like today, it's like 3 hours shorter than it was yesterday. Like, it gets dark like 6 hours, like at noon.
Well, having the shortest day of the year in the United States of America is sort of like how, as Eddie Izzard, he noted that, you know, in America we have things that are 50 years old, you know, whereas in Europe everything is like 900 million years old. You know, you have places, you know, like Antarctica, where you go for like 3 weeks and there's no night. And then there's that place in like Hergenflurgen where there's no day for like, you know, for whatever, 45 days. Here it's like the day is slightly shorter than it would be the rest of the year, you know, by about 90 minutes or so.
I've lived here for 20 years and I still have trouble getting used to how long the days are in summer when it's like sunny until like 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
Because have you ever been to Canada like in the summer?
God, no.
I was in Canada in the summer once, and I couldn't understand why all the stores were closed. And then realized it was 8:30 at night, but the sun was up in the sky like it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And it completely... I ended up going out to a club because some friends of mine, their band was playing in town. This was in Vancouver, I think it was. And I didn't go to this nightclub until like 10 o'clock at night, and it was still sunny out. And that's just wrong.
Yeah, the very worst time of year if you are working a like if you're doing any sort of like a morning show or anything on the radio is during the summertime, because it's light until like until like 9:30, 9:45 at night. You can still see the sun in the sky, and meanwhile you're having to go to bed at like 8 o'clock in the evening or something, and it just sucks. It's just the worst thing on earth. All right, you are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, December 21st, 2010. Coming up later on this hour, Science on the March, as well as your entertainment news. We'll also have, the glib observations about various things in a witty nature. If you want to get this program on your mobile device, you can do that at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. You can get it as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com later on in the day. Also, later in the day, iTunes will have this program available for your pod-like device. Here is Don Taylor.
Part of the UN General Assembly building was evacuated today because of a foul odor. UN spokesman Farhan Haq says it was found to be the result of a backup of sewage caused by high tides in New York's East River.
This is not a hazard. There were gases released from the sewage, but they're not harmful.
It must be a strange day at the United Nations when your job isn't to talk about, I don't know, the aligning of all peoples for a better and more peaceful planet or genocide or something, but just to talk about a river of poo that is flowing by outside. That's really what we're talking about, because this is the Hudson River. So we're just talking about a river of poo that is just cascading by the windows of the United Nations.
And probably helping to bring everyone together as one brotherhood of people who do not want to walk in poo.
It seems like that's a thing on which we can all agree. We'd like to lead a relatively poo-free existence in terms of the water directly outside our windows.
Israelite and Palestinian walking hand in hand as they wade through the river of poo. Haq said it was found to be the result of a backup of sewage caused by high tides. He already said that. High tides in the East River. Well, let's
say
that's
not a hazard. There were gases released from the sewage, but they're not harmful.
That's funny. It's the same setup for the same soundbite.
Yeah.
All right.
Funny how that happens.
There you go. Farhar Haq, or whatever his name is.
Farhar Haq.
All right. There you go.
First they came for our airports and bridges, and now they're after our salad bars. In an exclusive report, CBS News reveals that members of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula planned coordinated attacks on U.S. hotels and restaurants across the country, targeting Americans where it hurts, in their stomachs. While government officials wouldn't provide details, terrorists reportedly plotted to slip ricin and cyanide into salad bars and buffets across the country, scheduling multiple poisonings to take place over a single weekend. An unnamed intelligence source told CBS that the threat was credible, and hospitality industries have been on alert since earlier this year. Initially, it would look very much like food poisoning, said St. John's University Pharmaceutical Sciences Professor Dr. Susan Ford. Meanwhile, in a surprisingly candid interview with Good Morning America, Attorney General Eric Holder discussed the biggest security threats facing the country today, including homegrown terrorism, which the AG says, quote, keeps me up at night. The threat has changed from simply worrying about foreigners coming here to worrying about people in the United States, American citizens, raised here, born here, who for whatever reason have decided they're going to become radicalized and take up arms against the nation in which they were born.
I like the idea that he uses the phrase, the threat has shifted from just worrying about foreigners. We're now just dispensing with any sort of a fiction that it's, you know, that we're worrying about everybody equally. Now we really are just worried about people who are coming from other places and they're going to move next to you and date your daughters.
Oddly enough, it's not just little brown men who don't believe in the Bible.
We should say, by the way, that if this is true, and I mean, who knows? You fly airplanes into buildings, you poison salad bars. It seems like they're both things that evildoers might take part in. But this just shows that whatever good ideas they had, like at the outset, like whatever sort of innovative approaches to terrorism they might have once, that they've exhausted that and they've just gone to an old playbook. Because were you living here during the time of the great salad bar poisonings? Is that before your time, Don Taylor?
I'm not sure.
That would have been in 1989?
Yeah, that would have been right before I moved here.
But I could be wrong about that. It could have been earlier. It was no later than 1989. There was a guy of whom you may have heard, a guy named the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
Yes, I knew someone who actually
had become a
Rajneeshi.
Yeah, and so the Rajneeshis, one of their whole things was to inject salmonella into the population by going and like having. I don't know if it was just guys like sneezing on the lettuce or something, or if they actually had vials of it. But their whole thing was to go to restaurants in the Dalles is where they started, and they would get salmonella from places unknown, and they would put it all over the salad bars, which is the thing that they actually didn't just brainstorm; they actually did it.
Yeah.
And so there were just people who were just, I don't know, just with liquefied insides or whatever it was that salmonella did to you, which then led to those guys being busted and arrested, which then led to the most iconic image of the entire thing, which is the authorities opening his barn and driving like 17 Rolls Royces out of the Bhagwan's barn.
I do remember that. Yes.
Whatever happened to that guy? Is the Bhagwan dead?
I would imagine he was pretty old at that time.
Maybe. I mean, I would imagine having an endless parade of nubile wives keeps you. That's motivation for clean living, though. That's going to keep you alive. But we should find out. Next hour, we'll see if we'll answer the question, is the Bhagwan dead? Here is Don Taylor.
Well, on the subject of the homegrown terrorism, by the way, just a coda. Of the 126 people indicted for terrorism over the past 2 years, 50 of them have been American citizens.
Excellent.
So we're number two or something like that.
Well, it just proves that we're not going to, you know, we're going to stay in the race at least.
That's right. A death row inmate was executed on Thursday, the 16th of December, with a drug commonly used to euthanize animals, making 58-year-old John David Duty the first person in the United States whose execution involved the drug pentobarbital, according to the Associated Press.
I know. Okay.
What?
Nothing. I was going to do that. John David Duty! And it doesn't really work, but it just called out for it somehow. Please be telling me how you're spelling Duty.
D-U-T-Y.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not with the more amusing double O-D spelling. Okay.
By the way, I'm not the only person. I can't possibly be the only person. Whenever I see those Ford truck ads with the Dirty Jobs guy with Mike Rowe,
yeah.
And he says, it's Ford Super Duty. And when he says Super Duty, I just giggle like I'm six.
Well, especially because you know he probably, that somewhere there is some Smokey and the Bandit-esque outtake reel of him trying to say Super Duty 100 times. And probably just being high as a kite and being incapable of saying it without bursting into laughter.
Anyway, the reason that this fellow was euthanized using veterinary drugs...
There was nothing else around.
There's a shortage of the drug typically used in lethal injections.
Oh, I was just kidding. Really?
No.
Okay.
Called sodium thiopental, the drug has been in short supply for months, and many state corrections departments are feeling the pinch. Executions have been delayed in California, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Maryland, due in part to the time needed to review the use of new drugs.
How could we possibly delay executions any longer in this country?
Well, we actually read a story about this a month or two back, I remember, because remember there was an execution was delayed because they didn't have the drug, and they didn't want to use a non-FDA-approved death drug.
They didn't want to get it from like Canada or Panama or someplace.
Because I guess, you know, it might make her sick before it kills her. I had no idea what that... the only U.S. manufacturer for the drug, Illinois-based Hospira Pharmaceutical, says the supply issue is with the drug's active ingredient. And so that's the blame for the shortage. Duty and two other death row inmates in Oklahoma had challenged the use of pentobarbital in executions, arguing that a prisoner might be conscious but paralyzed when officials administer a third drug to stop the heart. A federal appeals court upheld a ruling against those inmates on Tuesday.
You know, whatever one thinks about the death penalty, it seems like if the whole point is to have the, you know, is to have a relatively smooth and painless procedure where, you know, there is no elongated, or prolonged suffering or whatever. It just seems like you ought to just stick with the firing squad. You know what I mean? Maybe clean is the wrong way to put it, but it just seemed like it was a simple, straightforward solution that accomplished the intended goal.
And if the idea is just to knock the guy unconscious before you
get
give him
a hammer.
Well, there's an off... my husband just had his gallbladder out. They didn't have any trouble knocking him out.
What about that jazz that Michael Jackson took? It seems like that did the job pretty easily.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Isn't there stuff they give you for, like, surgery? Yeah, you know, just for any... You know, like, if you're going to go under for any sort of medical procedure.
Give him a couple of OxyContin and a hit of NyQuil.
And then a guy just comes up and gives you what for with a crowbar.
Yeah.
You're going to be asleep. What do you care?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't trust the whole. I have this deep-seated sneaking suspicion that this weird, like, triple drug cocktail that they use for the death penalty is secretly, like, horrible. You know, that it's just because how would you know? I mean, really, who would ever be around to complain about it afterward? That it secretly just does something, like, it's excruciatingly painful.
Oh, yeah. And you end up with, like, the guy in The Serpent and the Rainbow, and you're just completely awake while they're doing everything to you.
Yeah, I mean. So, or it'd be like that Tales from the Crypt where the guy goes for the autopsy and he's still alive but can't tell them. So, as you said, it just seems like we're over-solving the problem. I mean, it's like they had, you know, anyway, whatever. I'm done caring. Here's Don Taylor.
Martin County Sheriff's deputies in Florida responded to an alarm in Stuart, Florida, and shot a couple. Sometime after a robbery. Sarah Govan, 30, died at the scene. I seem to be missing the first sentence of this story.
Well, just make it up.
Well, there's a couple from Salem.
There once was a magical turtle.
There once was a magical turtle, and it was owned by this couple from Salem.
Excellent.
And they needed special food to feed the magical turtle, so they robbed a U.S. bank branch in Stuart, Florida, at 5660 Commercial Street. That's actually where they had robbed a previous U.S. bank branch in Salem. They had handed a note to the teller asking for money, saying they were armed. And anyway, I guess police chased them from a bank in Florida, where I guess they were looking for more money from their magical turtle. And they ended up getting shot multiple times. Sarah Govan, 30, and Kevin Sear, 36, shot multiple times and taken to a hospital for treatment. They were both from Massachusetts, but apparently they've been traveling around the country, robbing banks, including one in Salem, and looking for food for their magical turtle.
See how that should just be your go-to sentence now. That should be your stand-in sentence every time there's missing text of any kind. You were listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, December 21st, 2010. Coming up, so by the way, so over here in the fabled Rick Emerson whiteboard to my immediate right, so we note all of the things that are coming up in the next show so we can, you know, adequately forward promote them here.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally it forms this sort of bizarre, like Burroughs-esque word salad poetry. So earlier when I came in, it actually said clown job, which sounds like some sort of a crude sexual act. Now it just says cannibal Christmas. And I'm telling you right now, here's what we ought to be doing. We ought to be retaining somebody to come in every day and look at the whiteboard, see the combination of show elements that you have written up there, and then just to be creating some sort of quickie Corman-esque horror film out of them.
Yeah.
Clown job, Cannibal Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm going to put in Cannibal Christmas right now. Hold on into Google and see if anything comes up. Let's see.
Corpse Penis Cheney.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the phrase Cannibal Christmas will return any Google results? And if it does, do you believe that those Google results will be for a film of any kind?
Wow. I'm not sure if there will be a film, but I know there has got to be some Google results for that.
All right. Typing in cannibal, by the way, the first result, you know, does that auto the suggest? The first thing is cannibal Holocaust, followed by cannibal corpse. And then right below that is just cannibal Kesha. So maybe she's got a new hit single out of some kind of Christmas.
Yeah, her new album is called Cannibal.
Cannibal.
And I only know that because I have a Google alert for the word cannibal, and it keeps coming up with stories about Kesha.
Okay, so typing this in, not only does it suggest Cannibal Christmas, it suggests Cannibal Christmas song.
Oh.
And then below that, Cannibal Christmas song lyrics. So apparently there is some sort of
we have to find that.
Some tune that's all the rage. Okay, there's a Cannibal Christmas song and a Cannibal Christmas book. as well as a Facebook page. There is no movie, though. So there you go. So that could be...
Register that title immediately.
Right now. In any event, so coming up next hour in the Rick Emerson Radio Program, Cannibal Watch, Joy of Christmas. Did you get those Joy of Christmas stories I put in the Dropbox?
I did, indeed.
Those are fantastic. We'll also talk to our good friend Kristen Bowie, who does a program of her own right here at Cascadia.fm. And listener Sean will be coming in to count down a top five Christmas song list. He will be doing his top five modern, I believe that is post-1970 Christmas songs. Top five post-1970 Christmas songs from listener Sean. That is all coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do some science news.
Here's your science on the march for Tuesday.
Raccoons create latrines, particularly locations that they visit repeatedly. While this practice may be sanitary for the animals, humans, particularly small children prone to putting strange objects in their mouths, can contract a deadly parasitic roundworm when they encounter these animal outhouses. However, recent research may have struck upon a prevention strategy. The study found that sterilizing these raccoon latrines and leaving out medicated bait for the raccoons, as is done to control rabies, can reduce the presence of the parasite. There are only 18 known cases when the worm Baliscacaris procyonis has infected humans, and all occurred in North America. However, infection doesn't become obvious until the worm's larvae move into the victim's eyes or nervous system, where they cause blindness, permanent neurological damage, or death. As a result, it's possible cases have escaped detection. This, according to Kristen Page, a disease ecologist at Wheaton College in Illinois. She's also the lead author of a paper published in January about the raccoon latrine parasite thing. I think it's important to not scare people, she says, but to teach them how to clean up and make sure they keep their play area safe. It's most dangerous for toddlers or kids who are putting things in their mouths. There are multiple ideas as to why raccoons create latrines, which multiple animals use to defecate repeatedly, including as a means of communication or sanitation. In an earlier study, Page and her colleagues found the parasite's eggs in 14 of 61 raccoon latrines located in 119 suburban Chicago properties. Raccoon feces have about the same diameter as a thumb, and the researchers frequently found them on raised flat surfaces, such as decks, a treehouse, flat roofs, landscaping rocks, and concrete retaining walls. Humans can be accidental hosts for these worms, which will spend the adult part of its life cycle reproducing within the raccoons.
That's great.
And if things go according to plan, another animal, like a mouse or a bird, will consume the eggs, and the larvae hatch and form cysts.
If things go according to plan.
Well, according to the worm's plan.
I was just, what sort of a horrible planet do we live on?
Because the raccoon will defecate the eggs, then hopefully another animal, like a mouse or a bird, will consume the eggs, which will form cysts within those animals.
Yay.
And then when the raccoon eats the smaller animal, it becomes infected with the larvae again, which once again becomes an adult.
It's the circle of poo, Don.
It's the circle of poo inside of raccoons.
Okay.
So if you have a foresty area near your home and you find what appears to be a raccoon latrine area, wear gloves and get rid of it, because horrible things can happen to you.
You know, I know that science needs to march on through research and through study and through, you know, laboratory testing and experiment and the collection of data and the analysis of knowledge. But it's like when you read about somebody whose job is just rooting through feces. It's like when I know that this sounds such an obvious the question or observation, but it's like I think about guys who are proctologists, and I really just want to sit those guys down in a room and go like, what is up with you? Like what, you know, you obviously have some drive to work in the field of medicine or the study of anatomy or physiology, the human body. These are all things I understand, but it's not like you have to work on the ass. Like
no.
What? Why is that? I don't dispute that people feel a calling to work in the medical field, or that people feel that it is that somehow they're, you pardon the expression, their duty to work on, you know, to work on the advancement of the human life or the overcoming of illness or sickness. But I mean, but that's like saying you want to work in Southeast Portland. You don't have to work it. You don't have to work like it in the building that's filled with sewage. You could work next door.
Yeah. When Patrick was in the hospital, and one of these guys we dealt with was a fellow who is a hematologist, so he's like a blood specialist, but he's also a cancer specialist. And you think to yourself, wow, that's kind of awesome. It's kind of interesting. I'm sure everything he studies and he deals with is really interesting. But then he comes and he's like talking to us about stuff, and I realize, how often does this guy have to sit down with people and say, oh, you might have cancer.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, he is paid, I'm sure, very, very well. He could buy and sell me several times over. But in exchange for that money, he has to sit down with people on like a daily basis and talk to them about whether or not they have cancer.
Yeah, that's an endless series of bad days, is what that is. You don't really have any. Even your best day at work is where you're only having to tell one out of five patients that they have cancer. You know what I mean? You only have to deliver the, ooh, don't start any long books, your speech, you know, like, you know, maybe once or twice before lunch.
And that's
the low point of your day, which is still way lower than the lowest point I will ever have on this job.
I mean, so. I don't like having to go to the library and deal with the librarian when my books are overdue. I can't imagine having a job where I have to tell people they have cancer.
I would avoid miniseries if I were you. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Just in time for Christmas, a new study finds that human children aren't the only primates to play with toys. Young chimpanzees in Uganda play with sticks as if they are dolls, a study found. Echoing sex differences seen in human children, young female chimps played with their makeshift dolls more often than males, according to a report published December 21st in the journal Current Biology.
Now, how do we know these are makeshift dolls?
Chimpanzees use sticks in four main ways: as probes to investigate holes potentially containing water or honey, as props or weapons in aggressive encounters, during solitary or social play, and in behavior the researchers refer to as stick carrying.
How did they come up with that name?
They had seen stick carrying from time to time over the years and suspected the females were doing it more than males, apparently picking them up and sort of cradling them and carrying them. And they thought, you know, we thought if the sticks were being treated like dolls, females would carry sticks more than males do and should stop carrying sticks when they have their own babies. And we now know that those points are connect. Young females sometimes took their sticks into day nests where they rested and sometimes played with them casually in a manner that evoked maternal play. So it's not clear whether this form of play is common in chimpanzees. In fact, no one has previously reported stick carrying as a form of play. But in this one particular chimpanzee group, apparently, the chimps treat their sticks like dolls.
I guess this is like how our parents were satisfied with only two channels of television or something. I mean, really, I guess if you don't have the Mattel Corporation around to create a sort of anthropomorphized or primate-like, you know, inanimate object, I guess you just go with the stick.
Well, and that's the thing that, you know, the whole doll gun thing with boys and girls, too, is that I've known a number of people who had small children, and particularly they had boys, and they didn't want their boys to be violent and to play violent games. I knew two parents, and particularly separate couples. And so it was like no war toys, no guns, you know, nothing that's violent. And then, you know, as soon as the kid's old enough to kind of have any idea what they're doing, they're going out in the backyard and picking up a stick and using it as a rifle.
Well, that is the lesson about giving. A fascinating thing you can do with kids is just to give them a huge amount, like to give them a big bucket of Legos and then just see what they create. And boys, of course, always create something that they can jab into somebody else's eye. That's always what it is. It's always like, what kind of bludgeon can I make out of this so that I can wield pain upon my younger brother? That is the fundamental gender difference right there. Except, although I will tell you, and I made a Facebook posting about this last night, I won't say forced. I enjoyed the rare pleasure of spending time with a young person last night with a small child. This is my wife's hippie friends are in town.
Uh-huh.
And so she's like charming Aunt Laura. And so she was actually watching their son last night. He's like four and he's just nuts about her. And I think that's the way it all, it's not, I mean, no offense, honey. It's less about her than it is about, I think it's like a lot of people have like the cool aunt or uncle type figure, you know, that they enjoy spending time with, because it's like spending time with a grandparent. No offense, honey, in some way, because you get all the upside and none of the downside.
Right.
Because it's not like she ever really has to punish him.
Yeah.
But she took him to like the museum and she got him ice cream or whatever. And it's like, you know, but she's not the one like sending him to bed and taking stuff away. So he just totally digs hanging out with her. And I was spared most of that. I got to be here in the studio with Ryan White's screaming baby instead.
Oh, it didn't. Stella didn't scream until the very end.
I know. I'm just being a dick.
You weren't the one who was getting hit in the face and
no,
having your hair pulled
out. No, Stella wasn't jamming her thumbs up my nose. So, I mean, it's one of the wind column for me. But it was the weirdest day. Not to get all sidetracked about it. But, yeah, we were here doing the Rick Emerson show. And to be fair, again, Stella was very well behaved for the most part. And
you were highly amused by the way that she grabbed my nose and started turning it like a control knob.
I got lots of photos I haven't even posted yet. And to be fair, she was really well behaved until we started the top five, which consisted of like a lot of really, really loud music being played fairly near her delicate baby-like ears. But she got progressively louder and louder and louder. Apparently, incidentally, she fell asleep as soon as she got in the car.
Oh, good.
So she went in the car and she just was silent. So it was a strange day because I was here with Ryan's baby for, you know, whatever, however long he was here, an hour or so. And then I got done here, went home, was at home for maybe an hour, and Laura coming, she's like, hey, I'm out with, you know, so-and-so with the kid. Do you want to come meet us and we'll get some ice cream and then we'll drop him back with his parents? I was like, well, that's fine. So, anyway, so while I was out with Laura and this child who we will call
Barney,
so his parents are just raging hippies. So I was having all kinds of fun teaching him to say horrible things like "I love George W. Bush," and "Barack Obama hates ice cream" because he loves ice cream. And so I was telling him that George W. Bush loves children and wants all children to have as much ice cream as they desire. And so that the only way that that's going to happen, though, is if George W. Bush is put back into power. And that Barack Obama hates children, hates ice cream, and is for earlier bedtimes. Clearly, you know, George W. Bush has to be allowed to resume control of the country. And by the time we dropped him back at his parents' place, he had memorized it sufficiently that he was able to recite it back to me. So, and the best part is, we didn't actually go up and really talk to the parents or anything. We just dumped him off. So now I'm going to wait to go home today and see if we heard back, see if my experiments have borne any fruit.
That's always one of the most fun things to do with small children. I had friends who had children, and I would teach them to say things like, you know, next time when you see your dad, tell them, Auntie Dawn has a family of Puerto Ricans living under her bed. Think you can remember that? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Our listener, Jenny told me that she was posting a response to this last night. She said that when her daughter was 2 years of age, Jenny taught her to kiss the screen and say daddy whenever she saw Tom Cruise on TV. That's the best thing I've ever heard, by the way. That's the best kid trick anybody's ever taught one.
Oh, God.
I don't even know what I was talking about here. Oh, but that's the kid. But he's the little boy who has the fascination with the color pink.
Oh, yeah.
He has the fascination with the pink, and it's like, and the dad is a big raging hippie and just is trying to train it out of the kid because he's got this whole weird conflict of, like, he's a hippie, but he wants his child to be a masculine child. And, friend, it's just not happening. It's just, you need to start preparing yourself now for the inevitable late teen announcement, all right? I'm just a little FYI from me to you.
Next time you're around him, the kid, just very subtly, just use the word fabulous every chance you can. Just say everything is fabulous. And I swear to God, he will pick up on that. Just say, that's fabulous. Would you like some ice cream? Ice cream is fabulous.
That's a great idea. All right, here is Dawn Taylor.
That's all of our science.
Ah, damn. All right. Well, we'll have more tomorrow.
Yeah, there's always more.
Here's your Science on the March for Tuesday, December 21st, 2010, right here at Legion of News.
A Brazilian bridegroom fatally shot his new wife, his best man, and then himself after announcing to horrified guests that he had a surprise for them, authorities said Monday.
I'm sorry, it's wrong to laugh. I'm sorry. Where did this happen?
Brazil.
Are they all dead?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then, you know, we who are alive have to laugh, because otherwise you are left only to cry, Dawn.
Witnesses reported the 29-year-old Rogério Damascena, a sales manager in I don't know where he is.
All right, close your eyes.
Somewhere in Brazil. Outside, he did not give any previous indication that anything was wrong at his wedding reception. This according to police investigator Raurito. Brito would not speculate on a possible motive, saying family members were in shock and he had not interviewed them yet. Brito did say the killings were believed to be premeditated because of the groom's announcement and because he had hidden a gun in his father's pickup truck.
I was going to say the gun probably is an indication of that.
25-year-old bride Renata Alexandra Costa Coelho and best man Marcelo Guimarães were both killed in Saturday's murder-suicide. A brother of the bride was treated at the hospital and released. The website Globo.com quoted the sister of the bride who left before the shootings as saying she didn't believe it was a crime of passion. My sister was a wonderful person who loved and wanted to be loved, she said. He was happy, she was happy, the party was beautiful. His family adored her and doesn't understand this. He revealed himself as a sociopath who fooled the entire family and killed his best friend, who was the best man.
I wonder if he actually just, did he phrase it as, hold on, I've got a surprise?
Apparently so.
Did he say, like, do you want to see something really scary? Or, I mean, was there sort of a, okay, everybody turn around. Okay, now count to 10.
And I guess he actually went through with the wedding. And this was at the reception. So I don't, apparently, you know, it's like got married, did the reception. No. Everybody moved to the reception hall. Things are underway. And then it's like, I have a surprise for you.
Well, and can we all just say this? Can we agree that oftentimes surprises don't really live up to the tease? You know what I mean? The payoff.
Yeah.
This show
is definitely a surprise.
Yeah, the show is often anticlimactic after the overture. But really, I got to say, he followed through on this. There was no anticlimax. All right. By the way, somebody says, I don't believe that the kids' ears were baby-like. They were, in fact, baby ears. Just checking, you know. All right.
Wow. And whatnot.
All right. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for listening. Or I'm sorry, to the, the Legion of News radio program. Coming up next hour is the Rick Emerson Show. We will have your Christmas, Joy of Christmas. We'll have your Cannibal Watch. Kristen Bowie will be here. And we'll also have listener Sean coming on to count down his top five post-1970 Christmas songs. That is next hour on the Rick Emerson radio program. This is Legion of News, available later on today as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. You can also get it via iTunes and on your mobile device. That is at mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Dawn Taylor.
In Eugene, Oregon, the Creswell School District paid $10,000 to settle part of its civil rights lawsuit in which school officials were accused of coercing a student to falsely confess to shooting a neighbor's dog in 2008. The Eugene Register Guard reports the father of Levi Dunn filed the lawsuit in February. The lawsuit alleges that Creswell Middle School Principal Shirley Burris and Campus Security Supervisor Will Davey, along with Lane County Sheriff's deputies, interrogated Dunn until he falsely confessed, then paraded him in front of neighbors at the scene of the shooting. Ballistic tests later cleared Dunn. The lawsuit says Dunn was ostracized and threatened after the false confession. He later moved away from Oregon because of it. Creswell Superintendent Rick Stuber said it agreed to pay the $10,000, but the settlement does not include an apology or admission that policies were violated.
I'm so confused by this. Why was the school interrogating him about a non-school crime?
I'm really not sure.
There's a lot in the story I don't understand.
You know.
Okay.
That's the thing, though, about kids in schools is like, I don't know. No, not okay. Going there. No, okay. No.
You are listening to Legion of News, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. It is squireselectric.com or 503-252-16. You're just sorting through stories and just assessing and rejecting them one by one by one.
It's just all making me angry today. All of them.
Okay.
Damn news.
SquiresElectric.com. And again, their phone number is 503-252-1609. You know what else makes you angry, Dawn?
What?
Is when you find yourself in the basement with your hand on the fuse box and another hand on a pair of wire cutters, and then you realize you have no idea what you're doing. And also, it's been raining for the last 5 weeks, and so your basement is filled with puddles. You are awash in liquids of all varieties.
And I have bare wires just dangling from the ceiling.
That's right, and sparks, plummeting down upon you. And you.
And rats are floating by on tiny little rafts.
And you realize that you have chosen poorly by trying to tackle your electrical problems yourself. This is an area in which expertise is really called for. If you try to puzzle there's not a lot of trial and error. Really, you get the one trial and I suppose the one error, and then you're going to be at the end of that particular road. So if you have electrical problems, if you have wiring issues, if you have something you need upgraded, if you're going to be expanding, if you're going to be remodeling, even if you're not planning the remodel or, you know, building a new house blending style until next year, you want to be getting all your ducks in a row now, as they say. Squires Electric can help you do that. They've been here in Portland for over a decade, operating as licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors, installers, and supervisors. And again, you can find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. 503-252-1609. Here is Dawn Taylor.
In the time it takes to log into an email account, compose a message, or think of a subject line, teenagers complain that they could have sent dozens of text or Facebook messages. And the numbers reflect their complaints. Email is now on the decline among younger users, the New York Times reports. Aside from Gmail, which grew 10% from a year ago, traffic is down at most major email services, and social networking sites are stepping up to fill the gap. Facebook's new messaging service looks more like texting than emailing, and email services are starting to introduce more social networking features.
What is Facebook's new messaging? What is Facebook's new messaging service?
I don't know.
Okay, me either.
So I heard vaguely something about it, but I didn't care, so I never bothered to find out.
This is like that This is like that thing on Twitter where there's I don't even want to talk about it. You know, well, I'm just going to write it down. I'll do it next hour.
Okay.
Christ, everything just makes me exhausted today.
The New York Times writes that the slide in email does not reflect a drop in digital communication. People have just gravitated to instant messaging, texting, and Facebook, which sends 4 billion messages daily.
I wish I was dead.
Part of the reason may be situational. Younger users rarely need to send formal messages or add attachments. But communications experts say the aversion to email is also generational. It's painful for them, says James E. Katz of Rutgers Center for Mobile Communication Studies. It doesn't suit their social intensity.
That's a made-up term. Social intensity.
Yes.
That's like metrosexual. That is somebody attempting to create that so he can write a thesis about it. That is a guy who is trying to write, he's trying to create that term and inject it into the social structure so that he can write something about it.
I would also like to posit that the school system, having decided that it doesn't really need to teach kids how to write anymore.
You're back on the spell check during test thing, aren't you? Do we just need to go to the school so you can just yell at somebody so that you can jam a stick into a sensitive area of their body?
Could we get somebody like on our show so I could just yell at them about the fact that,
sure,
that children need to learn how to spell?
It doesn't matter to me. I mean, in other words, if we get somebody on the show and you just want to spend an hour just spitting on them, that's fine. I don't care. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I don't have disproportionate angers. I just don't have kids. I'm not gonna have kids, and so it doesn't really matter to me if the next generation is, you know, smarter, dumber, just the same. Doesn't matter. Because I figure it's about the same. I think the ratios stay fundamentally unchanged. That 90% of people are essentially useless, and there's 10% of everybody else that's picking up the intellectual slack. And kids who are intellectually curious are not going to have their intellectual curiosity stunted by an idiotic school system, or you and I wouldn't know how to read. And people who are dumb are hopeless. They cannot be helped in any way.
Yeah,
they are useless.
You're probably just right.
So,
you're probably correct.
That's the thing. It's like, as much as I sort of poke fun at him, this kid that we were spending time with last night, this 4 or 5 year old, you know, he's a really bright little kid. Now, I don't know if he's a genius or not, here's the thing. It's not just that you can tell when a kid is really smart or when a kid is really bright. I think it's the opposite. You can tell when a kid is a loser. You can tell when a kid is a loser, and you can tell when they're going to stay a loser. And the fact of the matter is, that's almost every kid. Just because that's... and I only say that because...
Oh, God.
No, it's true. And that's the sort of thing that not being a parent allows you to assess realistically. You can assess it accurately. Because if you are a parent... It's not just that you see. We do the thing about, you know, like we do the little riff about parents think that their kids, you know, like inanimate scrawl on a piece of paper is like some, you know, it's brilliant or something, and it usually isn't. But it's not just that parents think that their own kids are brilliant. Parents, I think they just have to, as an element of like mental survival, must believe that children in general, you know, are predisposed to be smart, because. Because you have to think that, because by increasing the odds for the pool in general, it then reflexively increases the odds for your own kid. Because if you just believe that your kid is the billion-to-one exception, there's some intellectual part of your brain that tells you, but that's probably not true. The odds aren't in your favor. However, if you can just say, well, kids in general are all really smart, then that is a more logical way. That is a self-sustaining way of then saying that your own kid is really smart.
Yeah. It's sort of the opposite of the special snowflake thing.
Exactly. If you believe that all snowflakes are wonderful, then of course your snowflake is lumped in with that, you know. And so it's a fiction you can more easily sustain in your own head. Not having kids, we can be more cold-blooded and accurate and honest about this. Just that most people, I mean, adults, kids, whatever, most people are just not that bright. In fact, most of them kind of thick. So as a result, I mean, the sort of corollary to that is that most children are not that bright.
It's one of those ways in which, as cynical as I am about most things, I am just sort of a deluded optimist, I think. I want people to be smart, but more importantly, I want people to want to be smart. And it's hard for me when I realize that most of them don't.
Well, see, it's not even that. See, I think you're only partially correct there. It's not that most people don't want to be smart. It's that the dumber you are, the more you are convinced that you are already a genius. That's the thing. and that's the thing we all know to be true. You think of the dumbest person you know, I'll guarantee you. You know, it's like...
It's like people who absolutely can't write And they're the ones who actually finish a novel and make you read it.
And they just, and they're all convinced that they're Faulkner. That's the thing. You know, where it's like how, I mean, one hates to stereotype, but I mean, never mind. You know, because now we're officially just getting into Rick Emerson show territory.
Right,
this is one of those days where, like, the dividing wall between that show and this show has just dissolved. All right, we'll move on.
All right. Officials from 20 states asked a federal judge in Florida to throw out a new health care reform law. Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott calls the measure the biggest encroachment upon our freedom that Congress has ever levied.
Really?
Yes.
Not like slavery or anything?
No, nothing like that.
It's health care.
Healthcare
okay.
is the biggest
not
encroachment upon our freedom.
Not interment of Japanese.
No.
No, it's no. Healthcare is the biggest encroachment
you
on
know,
our freedom.
Not the draft or...
Not imprisoning nonviolent drug offenders.
Right. No.
It's healthcare.
Yes.
Is the biggest encroachment upon our freedom.
Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott.
Okay.
Healthcare. This healthcare reform law is the biggest encroachment upon our freedom that Congress has ever levied.
Okay. All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Do I need to be playing?
Yes, let's hear him speak, shall we?
This
I'm
is
sure
healthcare
it's
one.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Americans will lose their freedom. It's liberty and freedom which is being fought for in this courthouse today.
Abbott argued people should not be forced to buy health insurance.
This is the biggest encroachment upon our freedom that Congress has ever levied.
Okay.
Now, I will agree with him that people should not be forced to buy health insurance. But on the other hand, though, I think he may be engaging in a bit of hyperbole about this encroachment on our freedom.
I was just going to say that he and I can agree on that. I do agree on the... I think we agree on the outcome. I think it's the particular road. I think we both want to get to Damascus, but I don't think we necessarily agree on the correct highway.
Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum, who also seems to be a genius.
I bet he's a rational and reasonable person.
Yeah, he says that the healthcare reform law allows the federal government to butt in on what should be a state issue.
Does he follow up by saying that health care is worse than the Holocaust?
Well, let's see.
Okay.
Don't tell us what to do in the way that is violative of the constitutional rights of the individual and violative of the sovereignty of the states.
Wow.
He says the measure is unconstitutional because it requires most Americans to buy insurance.
There's no enumerated power in the Constitution that gives Congress the right to tell somebody they have to buy a product or else suffer a penalty.
I wonder if this man has a car insurance.
You know, here's the thing. I'm just going to say this. I'm not saying that, like, let's say, for example, Cuba is a perfect country where things run, you know, where things run swimmingly and like clockwork. Clearly, you know, there are issues there. I'm not saying that China is an ideal place to live. I'm not saying that the United Soviet Socialist Republic was like, you know, was a glorious paradise where you woke up every day and you just kissed the sun and thanked it for granting you, you know, another few precious moments in Mother Russia. I am saying this. You do understand on some level when you hear like this
Don't
guy.
Don't tell us what to do in the way that is violative of the constitutional rights of the individual and violative of the sovereignty of the states.
And when you hear this.
This is the biggest encroachment upon our freedom that Congress has ever levied.
And he's talking about the idea of health care for people. You do understand the appeal of a dictatorship. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Joseph Stalin's a good guy. I'm not saying we all want to live under Fidel Castro. You do, though, understand why, at a certain point in the evolution or history of some countries, there's some guy and his guerrilla friends hiding off in a treehouse in the woods, and they just go, oh, F that guy. You know, the voting thing, we're done. We're done with voting. We're just going to go in and we're going to fix it however we need to fix it. And he just, you know, and then they just go and they just take out the trash.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that results in anything better, but you do get where that frustration comes from. The whole like, well, look, this whole voting for elected representatives not working. I'm going to try a different method of solving things now.
Yeah. How about this for a plan? You just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe if you get it done by tonight, I'll tell you where your family is.
All right. Let's do some entertainment news to lighten the mood here.
God damn. All right, here's your entertainment news for Tuesday.
40-year-old actor Vince Vaughn and his wife Kyla Weber welcomed their first child.
Who's
daughter,
Kyla Weber?
Vince Vaughn's wife.
Is she an actress?
I don't think so.
How is that possible?
No, she's a real estate agent.
What?
She's a real estate agent,
really?
And he met her in his hometown of Chicago.
Okay.
They got married in January.
And good for him, I guess.
And they just had a daughter, Lachlan Kyla Vaughn.
Lachlan's kind of a cool name.
Yeah. That's nice. The actor playing Spider-Man in the most expensive musical ever made, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark on Broadway, fell 20 to 30 feet during a preview performance.
Is this another fall?
This is another fall. This happened yesterday.
Can I get tickets to this?
The 31-year-old actor is in the hospital after his harness malfunctioned near the end of the show. Spider-Man was on a bridge and Mary Jane was dangling from it, said audience member Jonathan Dealwis. She drops down, as is meant to happen. Spider-Man went to the edge of the bridge there. I think he was meant to sort of swoop over, but he just fell off. The harness, you could see it just flick off his back and fly backwards. A producer ended the show and some of the audience applauded awkwardly while the actor was carried away in a neck brace. Spider-Man is the most expensive show to ever hit Broadway, but is yet to open as the production has encountered repeated problems and injuries.
That's the best phrase I've ever heard. The audience applauded awkwardly as the actor was carried off in a neck brace. Oh, my God. That's the funniest thing I've heard. I mean, I know we're only on Tuesday, but that's the funniest thing I've heard this week so far. Oh, excellent. All right.
Actor Lorenzo Lamas, who's 52, will marry 23-year-old Shauna Craig on April 30th in Cabo San Lucas. This will be the fifth time Lorenzo Lamas has gotten married. His last marriage to Playboy playmate Shauna Sand, his last wife was also named Shauna.
Of course.
Ended in divorce in 2002. I'm
trying to remember if I interviewed Lorenzo Lamas or not. Did he have a reality show, like Bringing It to Lamas? Leave It to Lamas. I did interview Lorenzo Lamas. He was the guy, he was in Renegade, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a favorite of my friends and I when we would have our girls' bad movie nights, and we would watch things like, you know, Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS.
Yeah.
And everyone had a turn going to the video store. And I'd say probably about 3 out of 5 times somebody would come back with a Lorenzo Lamas movie.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, this one's got Lorenzo Lamas. Like, woohoo! And we'd break out the wine, and they were awesome.
He's a terrible actor.
He really is.
He's really...
His hair out-acts him in every movie.
He's one of our most wooden thespians.
Yes. 30 Rock actor Tracy Morgan is recovering from a kidney transplant that he underwent December 10th. Tracy is doing well and taking some much-needed time to recover after the surgery, said a statement from his publicist. He's looking forward to going back to work after the holidays. Reality star Gordon Ramsay's new book, Gordon Ramsay's World Kitchen, Recipes from the F Word, was named one of the 5 worst cookbooks of the year from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. The Watchdog Group announced that Ramsay has traveled to the ends of the earth to bring back dishes that will wreak havoc on your health.
Wow, that should totally be the tagline.
I would put that on the cover of the paperback edition.
I'd blurb that as big as I possibly. I'd put that in like 15-point type above the title.
Other cookbooks making the list included Home Cooking with Trisha Yearwood,
with
the group claiming that her recipes are loaded with fat and cholesterol.
Awesome. They ought to just have a cookbook called Loaded with Fat and Cholesterol, or great tasting food that will kill you.
Wrapped in bacon.
Seriously.
Food that is just a fist around your heart.
Yeah, food versus your heart.
The British group Blur are headed back to the recording studio early next year for a new album.
No one cares.
The lads will be getting it into the studio next year, said a source. There's no concrete plans regarding what they will do with the material, but if they're all agreed, it could become the first full Blur album to feature all 4 members in over a decade. The group's frontman is Damon Albarn, who created the group Gorillaz.
This is a story we're doing, I think, just for Mark the Brit, listener, because there's no other conceivable reason why anybody would be reading, not even Gustav
and
would be reading this.
And for my husband, Patrick.
Is he a big Blur fan?
He is a fan of Blur.
Really?
He has often said that Blur and Oasis hit at the same time, and he does not understand why Oasis got famous and Blur did not. He's a fan of Blur.
Really?
He really is.
Okay. Well, whatever. Look, as the guy holding down the Oasis half of that equation, that's just a thing we're going to have to agree to disagree on, because the next thing, you know, because if not, otherwise we're just going to be in a bar and we're going to be hitting each other with whiskey bottles, you know, and then taking it out back in the, you know, before the bobbies come to take us away.
Singer Shania Twain has announced her engagement to the man whose then-wife stole her husband. Twain, one of the first country singers to achieve major crossover success in pop music.
Wait, She has announced her engagement to the man whose then-wife stole her husband.
Right. She was brokenhearted in 2008 when her husband of 14 years, legendary producer Robert Mutt Lange, left her for her best friend. Now 45-year-old Twain is said to be happier than she's ever been after becoming engaged to the man whose wife stole Lange.
So they swapped partners, basically.
Apparently so.
Okay. Well, that's how they do it in Switzerland, I guess.
Frederick Thibault, 40, was married to Shania's best friend and house manager, Maria Ann Thibault, who is now living with Lange. Maria Ann was Twain's secretary and managed her 46-room chateau in Switzerland. She became a close confidant and travel companion as Twain knew virtually no one else in Switzerland. When her marriage imploded, Twain turned to Thibault, a Nestle business executive who had split with his then-wife, Aunt Marianne, for comfort. We leaned on one another through the ups and downs, taking turns holding each other.
I leaned on his penis, mostly.
We've become closer and stronger through it all, she wrote on her website.
Uh-huh.
In asking for her hand in marriage, he presented Twain with a 3-carat solitaire diamond ring. She's worth an estimated $700 million.
This is not a world of men. This is just a, as Ricky Roma would say, it's just a world of, this is just a lot of wastes of oxygen walking around out there. Hey, this is like the, did you ever read Bill Wyman's book, Stone Alone?
No, I never did, but.
You know, because he had that whole thing where his son, he swapped wives with his son.
Yeah.
Where he, let's see, if I can get this right. He was dating a woman and his son, he married a woman. His
right.
son married the woman's daughter, and then they divorced and swapped.
Yeah.
So it's like then, which means that he was then married to his own daughter-in-law. No,
right.
his own stepdaughter. But then
no, his daughter-in-law.
No. Because he married the mom.
Oh, that's right. So it was both his daughter-in-law and his stepdaughter.
So it was like mom and daughter married dad and son.
Yeah.
And then they swapped. So he married his own daughter-in-law, and his son married his own stepmother and stepdaughter.
Yeah.
And then it was a thing where, like, it was one of those, like, he literally, like, became his own, like, uncle or grandfather or something. So it's the thing about that is that I had no idea she was married to Mutt Lange for 14 years. It's like the thing about Shania Twain is I only have 2 points of reference for her. One is that, you know, I know 2 things is that she came out and she had that huge, you know, that Come On Over album, which was such a huge hit. And then the next thing I know is like she was living like in an ice chalet in Switzerland. And I don't have any point of reference in between the 2 things.
Yeah, the only thing I really know about Shania Twain is that I saw a couple of her videos and then I saw an interview with her where she stated without any sense of irony that she was really happy that she was getting ahead in the business purely through her talent and was not using her sexuality.
Oh, and that she also claimed to be an Indian. That was that's the other thing I remember about her. All right, so there you go. Oh, and it has nothing to do with the fact that her husband was Mutt Lange, like one of the most successful record producers of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Legion of News. We will now draw a curtain down on this episode and leave you to the rest of your day's amusements, which can include the Rick Emerson Show at rickemerson.com for the low price of just 32 cents a day. That is 1/4, 1 nickel, and 2 cents. A giveaway, a steal, a value of Gaussian proportions. And don't forget, you can listen for the first week for free and then say to yourself, my God, I'd be a fool not to listen to this longer. It makes me more pleasant and, you know, and more intelligent by leaps and bounds.
Minty
Find
fresh.
That out at, exactly, at rickeverson.com. It is Tuesday, December 21st, 2010. This was Legion of News with Don Taylor at the news desk. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler. Chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic Tuesday. We'll see you again tomorrow at noon.